Hello and welcome to the Ireland Library. My name's Laura, I'm from Laura Liz Buckley.
And I'm Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And this is episode 11. Happy days. This week, I read Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. What did you read?
I read The Hungover Games. I really wanted to say The Hunger Games. The Hungover Games by Sophie Heawood. It's a memoir.
That's fun. That's, I think, our first bit of non-fiction on the pod, isn't it?
Yep.
Right, so the way it goes, for those of you who are unfamiliar, is I will read the blurb of my book, Jo will read the blurb of hers, then I will pitch my book, chat through my feelings about it, give the seashell rating and the all-important question of whether or not it would come to the island with me, and then we will swap places and Jo will take you through the same thing with her book. So, blurb of Nothing to See Here. Lillian and Madison were unlikely roommates and yet inseparable friends at their boarding school. But then Lillian had to leave the school unexpectedly in the wake of a scandal, and they've barely spoken since. Until now. Madison's twin stepkids are moving in, and she wants Lillian to be their nanny. However, there's a catch. The twins spontaneously combust when they get agitated. Flames igniting from their skin.
Sorry, what? I'm sorry, what? I have never interrupted a blurb before, but...
Ahem, may I continue?
Yeah, sorry.
I tell you what, I will just pause a moment to say that my mum bought me this book for my birthday. And when she gave it to me, she said, read the blurb, read the blurb. So I read the blurb and I burst out laughing. And one of the first things I said was, I have to read this for the podcast because I have to see Jo's reaction when I read this blurb to her.
I'm so glad my comedic value has come through on this podcast. I'm also really glad that you read it in your usual voice, because I was like, oh, okay, I wonder what the scandal could be. And then you were like, combust. I was like, excuse-moi.
Right. Anyway, back to the blurb, because you'll hear all about the twins later. So, however, there's a catch. The twins spontaneously combust when they get agitated, flames igniting from their skin in a startling but beautiful way. Over the course of one humid, demanding summer, Lillian and the twins learn to trust one another and stay cool. Surprised by the intensity of her feelings, Lillian ultimately begins to accept that she needs these strange children as much as they need her, urgently and fiercely.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's my blurb. How about yours?
I mean... So this is the blurb from The Hungover Games. I had no idea how to commit to another human being. I could barely commit to reading a magazine, and I wrote for magazines for a living. My specialist subjects were celebrities, and my own relationships made their marriages look eternal. I've never paid a household bill that didn't mention bailiffs, and my idea of exercise was to go and stand outside a famous person's house and stare until I convinced myself that I lived in it. But my life in LA was happy, free of care and consequence. That was until I came down to earth with a bump.
Hmm. Pretty intriguing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not spontaneous combustion, but yeah.
It's definitely not spontaneous combusting, but literally, if I was drinking, I think I would have spat. Out over the screen, because you lulled me into a false sense of security thinking this was going to be a normal book, and it's clearly going to be anything but. So fire away with your pitch. I don't know how your pitch is going to top the blurb.
I know my pitch is, when Lillian gets a message from her old school friend Madison about a possible job opportunity, she's excited. She shows up with no idea what to expect, but what she gets is weirder than she could possibly imagine. A request to take care of Madison's stepkids, who, by the way, have a tendency to spontaneously combust. Lillian is about to have the strangest summer of her life, learning along the way about the overlaps between obligation, duty, and love. So I kept it pretty simple.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Nothing to see here in terms of my thoughts. So, from the very first page, the author sets up a really strong contrast between these two women who kind of are... the plot's kind of built around. So you've got Madison, who's glamorous, successful, and interesting, and you have Lillian, our first person narrator, who seems to be kind of in stasis, basically. She talks Madison up for a bit before she even starts to tell us about herself. So you get a really clear sense of the dynamic between these two. One of them is the successful one, and the other one is Lillian. And then, so You start to learn about Lillian's history pretty quickly in the context of explaining how she and Madison met, and you find out that she used to be furiously ambitious. And there's this quote that I love that I think it really paints a picture of her. She says, "I had spent my childhood gritting my teeth and smashing everything to bits in the name of excellence."
I do like that quote. That's quite a nice quote.
Yeah.
Different as well. Different. Yeah.
So you get introduced to Madison twice over. Once on the first page as Lillian explains how different they are. And then again within about 10 pages as Lillian describes their meeting as teenagers. So they were sharing a room at a fancy boarding school, which Lillian went to extraordinary effort to get into and win a scholarship for. But right away when the two meet, there's this kind of shift that happens. Madison's childhood introduction makes a strong impression. She has a little monologue about wanting to be powerful. She says, "I want to be so important that if I fuck up, I'll never get punished."
I really like her already.
I know. And in the face of that, all of the momentum that Lillian seems to have had as a child seems to wane a little bit. So that's kind of interesting. They are really, really close at school. And then you find out about the scandal that caused Lillian to have to leave. And the way that all that went down, I guess, seems to have kind of stripped her entirely of her ambition. At least by the time the novel kicks off, she's working two pretty nothingy jobs, in her own words, and not exactly that excited about anything in her life, which is a massive shift. She went from this powerhouse of a teenager and meeting Madison and everything that went down in their relationship and not really their, but the stuff that went down at school has just left her drifting completely. And then obviously she gets this letter from Madison, and they have been corresponding, they've been kind of pen pals for a while, but this letter from Madison saying, "Come to my house, I have an opportunity for you." Lillian shows up and Madison dances around it a bit. She sort of starts by saying, I want you to be like a," she doesn't say nanny, she's like governess. "Would you be like a governess for these kids?" And Lillian's like, "Okay, what's wrong with them? Why are you talking about them like this?" And she's like, "Oh, nothing. They're a bit odd. And you have to be very discreet," because her husband is a senator. So it's very hush-hush. They don't want anybody to know about the peculiarity of the twins. So Lillian says, "Yeah, of course I can be discreet." She's kind of intrigued, getting drawn in. And then it's like, "Oh yeah, they catch fire."
Just so casual.
So, I mean, I've got to say, it's a very funny book. It's not like a laugh a minute comedy, but it's so weird that there's a lot of humour just inherent. I mean, you saw what happened when you just drop, "Oh yeah, the kids catch fire." It's so weird that you can't help but laugh. But there's also a lot of quite funny conversation and stuff between the characters. So the author doesn't just rely on flaming children for comedy. The kids catch fire, which is obviously a thing. There's some exploration of when this happens. A teeny tiny detour into the question of how it might be happening, but we don't really dwell on that. The characters kind of just accept that it's a thing. It's a weird thing. It's a worrying thing. Potentially a very dangerous thing, although the kids don't seem to be hurt by it. That's established quite quickly. They set things on fire around them. The fire can be transmitted and burn other people, but they are not burned up by it. They don't seem to be injured by catching fire. So the main threat is to the people and property that surround the children when they catch fire.
I mean, okay, just going through some of the thoughts, I'm going to be the voice for the readers and the listeners and just be like, how have they managed to keep such a lid on this when their children literally catch fire? Obviously, I don't know the full aspects of the story yet, but I'm just imagining you take your kid to get some ice cream. They want sprinkles, but the ice cream man doesn't have sprinkles today. The kid gets very frustrated, combust. Ice cream, melted, possibly bam, up in flames. That would be quite hard to hide. So I just don't understand how you could afford, like if you could think to yourself, "Oh, I'm going to run for Senate. My kid's combust station. That won't be an issue. I'm going to sail all the way to the White House because, you know, fire kids are so normal."
So, right, let me just put together as much as I remember before I start making stuff up for you. But basically, these are his kids with an ex-wife
Also, is she a superhero? Does she combust? Or is she not?
Unknown.
Oh.
She's not... I think she's actually dead at the beginning of... I think she's already deceased, and the kids are staying with grandparents who are being paid quite a lot of money, despite the fact that I think they're the wife's parents, so you'd think that they just have like a certain amount of familial loyalty, but I think they're being paid off as well to keep things quiet. So you find out a little bit about the mum reasonably early. Madison, I mean, it's all coming from Madison, so obviously you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, but she says that this woman was not entirely okay. Though I think she describes it as that there was like a darkness to her. And I don't know if it's said explicitly or if it's like implied that she kept the kids kind of under wraps anyway. I don't know whether she's supposed to have known that they were likely to catch fire. I don't know whether she ever caught fire. I don't think she was sending the kids to school. In fact, I think we know that she wasn't sending the kids to school. So I think she was keeping them in and out of sight a lot. Even so, you can kind of imagine a lot of different ways that this could have got out. Although I guess, you know, if they burn a house down, which is entirely possible, nobody's going to know how it started. And unless you say, oh yeah, I guess that would have been when Roland caught fire and then like he was just holding onto the curtains.
Is one of the children's names Roland?
Yeah, they're called Bessie and Roland.
That's cute.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to rewind a little bit. Obviously, I know you're not quote for quoting the book, but you know how Madison is like, oh, she had a bit of a darkness to her. I have a bit of a darkness to me, but my dog doesn't catch fire. Do you know what I mean? There's a whole scale of darkness. There's, you know, wishes it was Halloween every day. There's mm-hmm. depressed. And then there's spawning fire combustation children. Like, I feel like such a scale of darkness that, Madison, you need to give us more information, love. Just because.
Right.
Like, this is odd. And I literally don't think I'm going to get over the compostation of children for a very long time.
Yeah, it's weird. I was just having a quick flick through. I'm just trying to see whether there's any other information that Madison gives you, but not really. She says Jane was, well, she was strange. She had darkness inside of her, and then sort of moves on. And then says, okay, well, Jane died. She died a few months ago, but then doesn't really talk about... Oh, no, okay, she does say that the ex seemed to be losing it a bit and was calling late at night saying disturbing things to Jasper, the husband. And
like, maybe your children are catching fire, Jasper, can you come help me out a little bit, please? And he's like, you cray. And then literally gets the children and he's like, oh, actually, she was right on the money.
Yeah. So the kids are staying with Jane's parents, so their grandparents, and everything is being kept hush hush. When the kids are collected to be brought back to Madison and Jasper's home, you find out that the grandparents are basically keeping them in the pool almost 24/7.
Smart.
Yeah, I mean, good move. Safest place for combustible kids.
And I mean, then what are they going to set fire to? The rain. But
it's still, what I was trying to get at is that it's still strange within the world of the story. It's not like it's like, oh yeah, sometimes kids just catch fire, as you do, but the characters just take it as the strange but real situation that it seems to be, and they just make the best of it and get on with things as best they can. The kids, Bessie and Roland, are fascinating, and I would have loved to read more about them and their relationship with each other and how they interpret their ability. They've obviously had a really difficult life, which is touched on, but not explored all that much. You get little hints of what they've been through, and even aside from the fact that obviously they know they're weird, they know that this is not normal, but you don't really know what they make of it. And I don't know if it's partly because my relationship with my brother is like a central thing of my childhood, and that was huge in my life. So when I read about kids and siblings, I'm always really intrigued as to how they relate to each other. And I felt like we didn't get as much of that as I'd have liked. You get little hints. Bessie seems to be the one who takes charge. She seems to... You almost feel like, I don't know how much I'm reading into this and how much is there deliberately within the writing. that she kind of has taken it upon herself to take care of both of them. So she's the more aggressive of the two as well, and the one who challenges more, whereas Roland seems perhaps a little more reticent, a little more quiet, a little more careful. But yeah, no, I was really interested in what was going on with those two, and you get hints, but you don't go that deep into it, which was occasionally a bit disappointing for me. And then there's another kid in the story, Timothy, who is Madison's son with Senator. And he's a bit odd too. I mean, he's not like Catching Fire levels of weird. He's just like an odd kid. There's a really cute scene between him and Lillian where he explains to her how he plays with his stuffed animals. And it's just kind of like a weird little moment that was quite cute. And again, I would have liked to see more of him. I guess I'm just really interested in all the kids. I'm like, what's going on? What makes you guys tick?
Literally, what makes you combust?
What makes you tick, 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 explode? Into flames. To be honest, pretty much all of the characters in this book are sort of off-kilter in a way that's really interesting, but you don't get much more of a surface-level explanation of any of them. Which brings me to the relationship between Madison and Lillian, which there's a lot hinted at. They obviously have this whole unresolved thing around the incident that separated them as teenagers that Lillian says, we basically never talked about why I left. Also, there are a lot of indications that Lillian has feelings for Madison, and I'm not really sure whether it's one-sided or not, whether Madison maybe is aware of it and manipulating it, whether Madison feels the same but can't act on it because she knows that her life has to follow a certain path for her to get the power that she needs. Don't know if Lillian is gay or bisexual or just has fallen for Madison's weirdness, or even maybe not even that deep. Maybe there's just like an intrigue there that borders on. There's definitely hints of romantic feelings. I mean, right in the first intro, she says something like, she looked psychotic as she said it, and I wanted to make out with her. So it's not like it's subtle that there is that element to it. But I, you know,
can't comment.
Yeah, and partly because obviously last week we read that book that had such brilliant. Was it last week that we read something to talk about? I feel like I've gone from something to talk about to nothing to see here, which is kind of an interesting title combo. But yeah, that had like great representation of a lesbian character and a bisexual character, and I was kind of like, oh, are we gonna get a bit of that? But no, none of that. Which would have been fun, but not really explored that much. It's very easy reading. I couldn't quite put my finger on why, but it felt like a book for a younger audience a lot of the time. But it's very sweary. And the ages that the main characters are in their late 20s, obviously other than the kids who are kids. But that suggests sort of an adult target audience. But I don't know if it's because of the kind of very surface level nature of the writing that I felt like it was aimed at a younger group, or something about the writing being so... The writing was good. I don't know. I couldn't quite work out what it was about it that made me... I kept thinking it was like a YA... Yeah. And then you'd hit a load of swearing and something that referenced the fact that they're older main characters, which, I don't know.
Is it sort of in America?
Yes.
Maybe it's NA, because we don't really have a new adult section here, but America does. It's like, it's really big over there. And basically it's the aspects of YA, but the age of the characters is older and you can get away with a little bit more.
I would have thought that new adult would be kind of early to mid-20s, but I guess 28-ish. I don't know. Maybe it's a new adult. It's not that it bothered me that often. It's just because I was reading it knowing I was going to be talking about it, I was thinking about where's it positioned, because it leaves so much not explored. Mm-hmm. And that is a characteristic that we found in a lot of the YA books that we've read. Justice for various plot lines. I wanted justice for several plot lines. Not plot lines. I wanted justice for character dynamics, and I wanted justice for backstories. And I wanted more. With that said, it never feels like it's a slow-paced book, although plot-wise it's not like a phenomenal amount happens, but it never feels like it's dragging. So it's never boring, and you are always thinking like, oh, that sounds really interesting, that sounds really interesting. And then you get to the end and you think, oh, have I not got any more? What else? So Lillian didn't always feel entirely consistent as a character, not in major ways. She remains pretty level in terms of her personality. But there are just the odd thing that, one thing that really stuck out to me on that front was there's this comment that she makes in the latter third of the book. It's not that, it's reasonably close to the end. She just makes this comment about not liking to be touched, which feels like something that should have come up several times before, because there are all these scenes where the kids fall over her or want to sleep in her bed and she's not got that much space. And it's like, if you don't like to be touched, why is this the first time that we're really hearing about this? Not that she's keen to have the kid. She's a bit like, all right, if you insist. But I don't know. It just felt like, oh.
I just feel like you wouldn't take a role with children, knowing that children don't have the same level of boundaries as adults do. So I see what you mean there.
She is vaguely reluctant initially to take on a role of looking after kids, but that it comes down mostly to the fact she's like, I don't really know kids. I don't know how to relate to kids. But she kind of can't really turn down. A, she can't turn down the intriguing mystery of it all, and she can't say no to Madison. So she ends up being talked into it despite her reticence. So the other thing that is kind of a function of Lillian's personality is that I was never really sure what the plot was, because I wasn't sure what she wanted most of the time / ever. She seems to be quite an, I wouldn't say apathetic character, because she does have strong opinions on certain things, like on what's fair and how to be fair about the way the kids are treated. And she seems to have a good instinct for taking care of them, and she seems to like them. But she doesn't seem to have much of a plan at any point about what she wants to do after this summer, whether she wants to have any more involvement with getting these kids integrated into society, whether she wants to try and use this position with Madison as a springboard for something else, whether she, you know, there's just no sense of what she wants to do or where she wants to go. So although the plots, although the story is very interesting, there were a few moments where I thought, where is this going? Because, you know, most of the time when you're reading something, you're like, oh, well, the character wants this, so they're either going to get it or they're going to be thwarted. You know, they're either going to achieve their ambition or they're going to fail and be unhappy about it. Or maybe something's going to change their worldview entirely and they'll end up wanting something totally different. But there was none of that, because you never knew what Lillian was after. So you were just kind of following through the paces of trying to work out how to keep these kids from burning everything to the ground. So, yeah, that did mean that the ending for me had a sense of something like anticlimax. Not exactly, because it's not like I had expectations and they were dashed. But I did get to the end and feel a bit like, okay, well, I guess we're leaving it there. Sure.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it so much on the way up to that. And then it was kind of looking back that I had a lot of those feelings I mentioned about wanting to know more about the characters. There would be, because there was always something else interesting going on. So you'd get a little hint of Bessie and Roald's relationship. And I'd think, ooh, yes, give me more of this. I want to know, you know, do they have any resentment about the way they have to live? Do they fight with each other, or have they had to learn not to because it's them against the world? But before we could even think too much about that, we'd be on to the next weird thing going on. Some interaction between Madison and Lillian. They're like, oh, are we going to get hints of some budding romance between them? Or is Madison manipulating her feelings? And then you'd get distracted by something else. And then so it was really looking back as I was writing up my notes and thinking about the whole book that I thought, God, we really didn't get any of that.
Sounds like the book was a complete cock tease. It's just dangling many carrots on the end of fishing lines and you're getting none of it.
That's, there's an element of that, absolutely. It was
just this for Laura. Just for me. Laura and her carrots.
Curiosity, and yes, and the carrots, which sounds like a euphemism, but it's not. So yeah, that was Nothing to See Here. Very strange, deeply strange. Yeah. But very interesting.
Yeah.
Quick read. Seashell rating. It's really hard. It's so hard to pick a rating for this one. When I just finished it, I think I would have given it a 4. Looking back and thinking about it, I'm going to downgrade it to a 3.5. It's got a lot of merit. It's solidly written. It takes you through some really interesting characters and questions. But then it doesn't answer enough of them to be really satisfying at the end. Yeah. So yeah, 3.5 shells. I liked it. As I was reading it, I liked it a lot. In hindsight, I feel a bit more like, why couldn't you give me more of what you promised?
Justice.
Justice.
Would you take it to your island library?
You know, I'd still be so tempted, because I kind of wonder if I read it again, could I sort of glean more? But I'm going to say no, because I want books that are going to deliver more of what they hint at, and books that really go into those dynamics that I find so interesting, rather than books that just play with them. Yeah. Although I think it did it really well. I can't fault the execution. I just, yeah, personally, I want more, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I'm not saying, because I may well read it again, especially because it only takes about a day. It's not a long read at all. So yeah, do you think you would be interested in reading it?
I think I'm a little bit torn. I think based off the blurb in your pitch, I think I would. But then hearing you talk about it, I feel like, you know, I'm very, very plot heavy. The payoff's got to be good. And knowing that, I feel like I'd be setting myself up for a lot of rage. Because I feel like if I read it, as good as a book can be, if the payoff at the end isn't worth it, you know I'm kind of brutal when it comes to things like that. Obviously, I've not read it, so my seashell rating is purely based off my assumption. But I think if I'd felt like you did, knowing that we're a little bit similar, I probably would have even downgraded it a whole nother seashell.
Ooh.
Because it's got to have a good payoff. Do you know what I mean? It's got to.
Sure.
But that's just me. But off your pitch and the blurb, yeah, it would have definitely pulled me in. And I would have picked it up in a bookshop. But I think now I was talking about it, I'm a bit like, I don't know if the payoff is going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, so next up, The Hungover Games.
The Hungover Games by Sophie Heawood. I'm going to start obviously with my pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Finding Mr. Right, having a baby, a good career, and a cottage in England. Sounds like an achievable goal, right? But what if you decide to have a baby with Mr. Wrong?
Hmm.
I kept it short and sweet this week.
Yeah.
It's a memoir, as we've already said in the intro, and I feel like memoirs are excruciatingly hard to come up with a pitch for, because it's someone's real life, and the aspects of what you take from it could be quite brutal to the person.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read the author's note, mainly just so that people understand how memoirs can be written. So this is what Sophie says. This book is based on my own personal experience and my memories of a certain period of my life. Other people who were close to me at the time may, of course, remember things differently, and some names have been excluded or changed for reasons of privacy. This is because this is not a book about the individuals I have described, but about my own experiences and how they shaped my life. Now, I really liked that she included that in there, mainly because I'm not really giving any spoilers away, because Sophie Heawood is a real person. If you don't know her, it's pretty clear from the prologue, so I'll read you another little extract in a second. But basically, the book is about her living her reckless life in Los Angeles. And I say reckless because she openly admits that she's making consistently bad decisions. She mm-hmm. pays her rent barely on time. She barely pays her bills on time, etc., etc. Obviously, so there is some mentions of alcohol and drug mentioned throughout the book. And she's solo, so she's living in Los Angeles on her own. She was born in England, raised in England, and then moved over there for work. So she'd obviously built up some form of a career before moving over. I did do a little bit of research into her previously, and I know that she used to write for The Times. I think she still might, but I don't know if she's a constant contributor or if she just writes occasional articles. I'm just going to read a little snippet. Previously to this is sort of the prologue of this, the prelude, as she's called it. And she's met this guy in a bar, and he said, can I go back to your house? And she's like, yeah, all right then. And then somehow I get there and there are noises, and it is Dom, not Jesus, who is murmuring the word baby, testing it out in his mouth, how it hangs there in the air. And I'm tired and I don't want to pay my dues by taking him there in return, because it was never really about him anyway. At which point my bedroom door opens and I hear the soft footsteps before I see the small figure. And then the small figure turns towards me, opens its mouth and says, mummy. And that's instantly how we start the book.
Okay.
So it's broken into parts. So the first part of the book is about Los Angeles, and the second part is about London, and then later on is about how she's coping with life. So very early on, she takes us through, it's basically about her being pregnant and obviously the birth of her child. As I mentioned in my pitch, she doesn't consistently make good choices, and she gets dressed up one night and she meets a guy called the musician. That's what she refers to him as. Obviously, his name has been taken out for privacy reasons. But previous to all of this, she decides to go with her friend Lily to this sort of yoga retreat, mindfulness camp sort of thing. And she does all the stretches and she finds herself in excruciating pain. But the woman of the class says, bend into the pain, move into the pain. So Sophie does. And she ends up realizing that she slipped a disc. And that's what the excruciating pain is from. Now, she also knew that she had some health problems to do with her ovaries. I want to say it was
polycystic ovary syndrome.
Thank you. Polycystic ovary. And she's been aware of that. So the book sort of set now she's in her 30s, early to middle 30s. And she's known about this since she was 20. But the doctor, who whilst also telling her she slipped a disc, tells her that she won't be able to conceive naturally. And this hits her like a ton of bricks because, as I was saying in the intro, that's sort of her life setup. She'd love to go back and have like a family, and she's just realised that time has run out. And all this time, she's just been living literally paycheck to paycheck, living from one piece of work to another. And I thought it was really interesting, actually, in that side of things, because in my spare time, I have been doing a little bit of freelancing. And Laura, obviously, yourself, you've been freelancing. So it was really interesting to hear how you can be two sides of the same coin. So you could be a freelancer who really is quite cautious about their money, and then you could be Sophie Heawood and living in Los Angeles. And I think she buys a spaghetti bolognese for like $28. I was literally like, oh my God. But yeah, so she found out this really devastating news. She does take a week, I think she says, that she just cries in her apartment, which obviously is absolutely devastating. And devastating because whether or not she's made that choice, obviously she does say that she wants children, but it's a devastating realisation for any person when you don't know if you've completely made up your mind on what you want to do. That choice has sort of been taken away. The doctor does reassure her that, thankfully, the way her hormones work, that she would be able to get fertility treatment and be able to conceive that way. But obviously, at the time of this chapter I'm talking about, Sophie's living in LA, which is completely different to how it works over here in England. And if anybody is American and you're listening and why it's different, you actually get a free go, basically, at IVF over here. It's something very fantastic. Obviously, you have to like tick off so many boxes per se. You've got to have been trying for so long and all this and all that. But there is that over here, which I don't think is in America. And I think it's very costly in America. Like, it's all healthcare and over there in America. So there's that to contend with as well. So obviously, understanding she's very, very devastated, she goes out with her friend, has a drink, and he basically, in a very beautifully honest way, says that all the doctors told you is that you can't plan to be pregnant. That's it. So he basically says, and I quote, "Why don't you just shag like you're in the 1970s? And so she does that, and literally the next person she has an entanglement with, Sophie meets up with this guy, and a few chapters later she sort of briefly mentions to her friend Lily that her and this guy, the musician, have been doing the same sexy tango for about 7 years now. But on this particular night she decides to tell him, "You don't need to wear a condom because I can't get pregnant anyway." Badum badum, she gets pregnant. So that's basically the cusp of the book. There are some really beautiful moments in the book where she goes, it is sort of a story, I would say, sort of to her daughter in a way, to show the emotional growth that she went through. And it is, there's a lot of really beautiful moments. There's a whole chapter where she discusses how, and she's not saying that she's transgender, and obviously I can't comment on if other people find this offensive or not. I can only say it from my point of view. But I really liked how she spent a chapter discussing how she's never really felt like a girl per se, but not a girl as in her body, but just as in she's sort of fit in with the boys, and she really liked heavy drinking. And then when in the 1990s in England, when beer and football and drinking really took a toll, and she sort of fit in, and she's always found herself sort of looking at the women who really take a care in their appearance and stuff like that as these figures that she doesn't really understand. And she, at this point, she's still very early on in, I think she's in her first trimester, and she's adamant her baby is a boy. And she says the irony of it, that I've always felt like I've been a little bit out of place, and now my womanly parts are growing a penis. And I literally closed the book and I had a little moment to myself, and then I was literally like, that is so weird, I've never thought about it, That's so true. If I had a boy, if I was able to have a baby, so obviously I don't know yet, and if I do have a baby and that baby is a boy, my body, my female body has grown a penis. And it just blew my mind. And there's a lot of moments like that where she's very honest and she's very down to earth. And she, you like the little extract I said, is she's not afraid to be a little bit crass, which I think for some people, you might find that quite difficult and not to their enjoyment. But I am quite crass. So I really, really enjoyed it. What else did I want to mention? There was something else I really wanted to mention. Oh, there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing from her decision of whether to go back home or not home, I mean to London. And I feel like we do get the reasons as to why, and I don't really want to give them away because it sort of takes away from the book. But I feel like her decision is purely based on the fact that she feels like she should, because obviously she gets family support and stuff. And like I said, I really don't want to ruin the book. I know it's a memoir and I know a lot of it's out there anyway, but obviously the musician is the father of the baby and he's very hesitant. He wants her very early on to get rid of the baby. He thinks that the two of them will not be good parents, and she makes a lot of very tough decisions knowing that she's going to have to do this on her own. And then she has this really nice moment at her friend's for a baby shower, and she realizes that she's found a new family and that she wouldn't have ever been doing it on her own, but now she's leaving them to go back to London. And it was like a really nice moment that it's like something you would think of at the time, but I don't feel like anyone lingers on enough that so many years later we'll write a book about it, because I think her daughter now is 7, so this was 7 years ago, I think. And there's even a moment in the book where she says that the musician actually turns around to her and says, I think your talents are wasted writing about celebrities and music. You should write a book. And she decides, when she's decided to keep the baby, that one day she's going to write a book that says all the stuff that happened when, obviously, from conceived date to giving birth. And she actually does do that. And I thought that was really remarkable. Like, I don't know if she started writing this when she was pregnant or if she's managed to recall a lot of her memories. Mm-hmm. And if she has, like, fair play, because I feel like I've got a really good memory, but there are some moments where I feel like you would very easily forget them in the whole change of your life. Like, she's having a baby. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I was impressed with it. The only thing, God, I hate this. I hate saying bad things about books, but obviously it's not her as a person, because that's just who she is. But I feel like it's a little bit slow at times. The chapters are very short in the sense that they're only a couple of pages, and the words, they're not like set fully across the page. And I wouldn't say the font, the normal size either. So it almost does feel very fast paced, but it's not. So it can be like 2 or 3 chapters this really discussing the same thing, but the chapter title has got something different. So for example, so I'm trying to focus very heavy on the beginning of the book because, you know, I've changed.
You've made excellent progress.
I have made excellent progress. Thank you so much for noticing. So the first chapter says, in which I accidentally get pregnant. You're still laughing at my sarcasm, aren't you? I'm so witty. So the first chapter is called In Which I Accidentally Get Pregnant. She doesn't actually get pregnant in that chapter.
Okay.
So then the second one, it's called All Right, The Accident Pregnancy Actually Happens in This One. And that'd be fair enough. Like, we know that that does happen. But it's then in chapter 3 when she figures out that she's pregnant. So really, it's 3 chapters then discussing the same thing, which isn't a problem. But I kind of wanted a lot more of Sophie, as I feel like the title is very misleading in a sense, like the Hungover Games. I mean, up until like halfway through the book, she's more than halfway through the book, should I say. She's pregnant, so she's not hungover. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't say it takes anything away from it, but another part of the blurb that I missed off purposely, because it's long. Memoir blurbs are very long. So this is the story of how I staggered from a party in Collywood to bringing up a baby in Piss Alley, Dalston. How I never did find a copy of What to Expect when you weren't even fucking expecting to be expecting. And why paternity testing is not a good topic for a first date conversation. So I kind of expected to get a bit of staggering around Hollywood, and I really didn't.
Okay.
So I was a little bit, it was literally straight bang bush, she's pregnant. And so then the the plot of the story is so focused on that. It's sort of like a story about her daughter, which is beautiful, and that in its own right is absolutely amazing. But what I was sold was something a little bit more. So then I was kind of expecting a little bit more, although I have enjoyed the book.
Yeah.
If I'm making any sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The terms of the voice it's been written in is right up my street. There's a lot of F's and Jeff's throughout the book, which is right up my street. I love a good F-bomb. it's very honest. I mean, even to the point that I wouldn't say you'd sit there and go, oh, that's a bit too honest, but you'd sit there and go, oh, she might regret saying that. But she doesn't. She also has that about her, that if she says it, she says it and she stands by it, which I think is really beautiful and quite humbling to read in a book, especially because obviously right at the beginning she's having that am I going to be a good mum situation, but she does make a nod to the situation that she always knew from the moment the test said pregnant that she would have kept the baby. There would have been no other way that she would have. It's just she went through, I think, the mind process, but she'd already made that decision. And she goes to the cinema with her friends and they uncomfortably see a scene that obviously one of the characters in the film is getting an abortion, and she doesn't even think she'd make it to that place to run away at that point. She wouldn't have been able to. And I thought that was really nice to read, just because it is still, even if she's made that decision consciously, she's still then gone back and rethought every single option, especially because she makes no lie to the fact that she is poor as hell. I actually felt quite rich and I do not live well. She was literally absolutely outraged at the price of a pregnancy test, which if any of you have ever had to do one, you will actually know that they are literally robbing you blind.
Like, they're not cheap.
They are not cheap. And it baffles me. Yeah, it's absolutely baffling how expensive it is to pee on a stick. And she makes a nod to that. And obviously she's in America, so the price is different. And she literally buys one for $10. And even still, like, that's the cheapest one. And there's no fanciness to it. It'll literally just say pregnant, not pregnant. And it'll literally write it out. There's no line that you've got to work out, which is so infuriating as well. But $10, let's say the conversion of what I knew it was a couple of years ago, because obviously right now I don't feel like we can base anything off anything. But that's still like £7 here in the UK. Mm. But yeah, going back to the book, overall, I did really like it. I thought it was very honest and very humbling. I guess I just wanted, I feel like the bar for me had been set so high by Dolly Alderton's that I feel like it was going to be really hard to beat that, because that book literally blew my mind and it took me on a roller coaster. And I think I kind of expected that from Sophie, and it kind of wasn't so much a roller coaster as the little caterpillar ride that you go on as a kid, you know, when you go through the apple. Do you know which one I mean?
I think I know the category of ride that you mean.
Anyway, here we are. So based on that, and I feel like I've been quite mean, I'm going to give it a strong 3.5.
Okay.
It would tick over into a 4, but it doesn't.
It could if it tried a bit harder, but it's not there yet.
Yeah, just a bit one linear in a way. I didn't feel like there was any moments, and I feel like I got a lot of them. I know this is a fiction book. I know this is not a memoir, but it's a memoir within a in a fiction book. But I feel like when you read a fiction book, you kind of want either a large amount of time, a bit like in The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which, like I said, is a fiction book, but it's the woman's that's telling the story is like a memoir. Or you want something that's, there's a lot happened in a shorter space of time, where then when you're reading it, you're kind of taking on like a bit of a journey with them. Now, don't get me wrong, like finding out you're pregnant and going through that journey and doing it on your own is a journey. And maybe in a couple of years, if Joe was growing a baby, the book would feel a little bit different. But I just found myself wanting to flick the pages, which is but like I said, it's not her writing style. It's not the way in which the story is told. It's not her writing voice. It's literally just the content sort of the book just wasn't what I expected, so it just kind of sat at a 3.5 for me, really.
Sure. So I probably know the answer, but would you take the Hungover Games to your island library?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think if the situation was different and we got stranded in a couple of years and there was a small Joe inside this Joe,
sort of like Stacking Dolls style, if we
yeah, then I feel like my answer would be different. And I feel like that maybe maybe it's a good market, really. Maybe that's who the book's sort of aimed at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe connects more if you've been through pregnancy. Yeah.
I would recommend people to still buy it and give it a shot, though, or borrow it off somebody and just give it a read and make your own opinion, because it is a cracking book. It's just, I just don't think I was the target audience for this particular book. But that was The Hungover Games by Sophie Heawood.
Very good.
Yes, very good. Okay, now to Joe's question of the week. We really need a theme song for this part. Also, before we get to this.
Okay.
Lovely listeners, we have a Patreon. It's very expensive to run a podcast. Please support us.
What's in it for them?
What's in it for them? Amazing things. You get to support us. You get a good shout out.
We'll shout you out if you're a supporter on Patreon.
Yeah. You also, depending on which tier you go for. So there's three tiers. The lowest tier is the price of a good coffee at £2.50. And that's, you get a shout out. And that's just per month. So that's like just giving up a good coffee to just spend time with us. And you get, depending on how many weeks are in the month, you either get 4 or 5 episodes. So I don't feel like all that bad. You don't get 5 coffees for that price. The next tier up is £5 and you still get a shout out. Whoop, whoop. And you also get early access to the episode, so you can hang out with us on a Sunday rather than on a Wednesday. And if you want to do the almighty £7.50, you get a shout out, you get early access, and you get a monthly Q&A with me and Laura. So we would take your questions and we probably pay another couple of Joe's random question of the week. And you get that as well, which is amazing. And why would you not want that? So check out our Patreon.
Are we linking it in the show notes?
It's always in the show notes. Cool. Always in the show notes.
Very nice.
Always check it out. Always support us. So, Joe's random question of the week.
Okay.
Would you rather have no fingers or no eyes? I found this question and I was literally like, oh, what fun it would be to be on an island.
That's horrendous.
Oh, no. But unfortunately, I've got an answer. So.
I'd have to go for no fingers, just because the idea of not being able to see is even more distressing. Also, my toes are quite long and I'm quite dexterous with my feet. So I could probably pick some things up still with my feet.
That's very interesting. Also,
things that you didn't know about me.
I feel like we're really linked because I also have long toes and I can pick things up with my toes already.
Really?
I can pick pens and socks and things up. I'll show you my feet after this.
What tier of Patreon do you have to go for to see Joe's feet?
At least 20. At least 20. I'm selling my feet off for no one. Do you know what I mean? You got to really come with the good books to be getting photos. But if you do want that tier, email us. I email this in the show notes. If that's the tier that you want,
if you are,
I will sell
to
my
pay
feet.
Extra for feet pictures. We're getting into dangerous territory here, actually.
You will get 2 photos a month. Basically one photo of each foot for £20. I mean, where else are you going to get feet pictures from?
So many places on the internet, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, that's very, very true.
Sorry, what were you going to go for?
No eyes.
Okay.
Now, I have some things about this. I'm really blind without my glasses.
Okay.
So if we were on a desert island, right, I have thought about this, but I get the opportunity to think about this. And I know you love my tangents. If it was on a desert island, at some point my eyes are going to get worse, so my glasses are going to be little to no use. So I'd rather have my eyes taken, learn to read via Braille, because you would teach me, obviously. Or you'd read me stories.
Aww.
Yeah, which would be quite cozy, wouldn't it? And I could still be really useful, because I've got monkey toes and still got fingers. So
you can turn the pages on the book and I'll read it.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say. We can tag team. You know, like when you go and play those games as a kid and someone's blindfolded and you then have to go, oh, go left, left, and then go right, right. Do you know that game?
Yeah, yeah.
We could do that. So obviously, I have no eyes, but I have all my ligaments and all my fingers and toes. Whereas, unfortunately, you just have eyes and wrists.
Palms, right? I still have just don't have fingers on them.
Yeah. I don't know how specific it was with the no finger thing. I'm assuming when it says eyes, all my eyes gone.
Yeah, but my fingers end here. After the fingers, you get the palm, which is not fingers. Although I suppose the finger bones go all the way down. Yeah. I've only seen a small print.
Yeah. But there you go. So it would be a great dynamic team. I'd be able to make peace with the fact that I wouldn't be able to see. Being blind already, you know.
As an aside, I love how we've got a sophisticated delivery system bringing us milk and fresh food and our, like, Asda shop, but we don't get glasses prescriptions. What am I going to do about my asthma medication? Am I just going to have an asthma attack and die?
No, because I would breathe into your mouth. No, okay, so next man from Asda is not rowing over to us. It would obviously be delivered by airplane and it would just get dropped like a crate, like it always does in the film.
Sure, yeah.
And obviously, because it's our choice, we've not been kidnapped and put on a desert island. No. It's our choice.
Yeah.
So you would get your asthma medication, so I wouldn't need to breathe into your mouth.
Okay. Not that I would object to you breathing into my mouth, I just don't think it's the most efficient way for me to remain alive, so...
Oh yeah, especially because I can't see. So you're like, I'm having an asthma attack over here, and I'm like, where's here?
I was wandering away across the beach.
But there you go. So that was Joe's question of the week.
Great.
So thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening.
Support us on Patreon. Tell your friends and your mums about us.
Yeah, review us. On iTunes and wherever else. Yeah,
everywhere. Review us everywhere.
Don't stop on iTunes. Review us everywhere.
Yeah, tell everyone about us and how cool we are. Especially after, you know, I literally have just admitted that I will give you feet pictures and will breathe into my friend's mouth. Keep her alive. And that's the dedication of true love and a good host of a podcast.
This is our commitment to this project and each other.
Yeah. Heart you, girl. I heart you.
I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.